I'm Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Blue Lake Citrus Products. It's a subsidiary of W.G. Rowe & Sons. And I've been in the citrus industry for around 30 years. I was responsible for the futures trading and options trading at Tropicana for most of the 10 years that I was there. I was also, when my wife Kate and I were in the consulting business, we also did a lot of consulting to help teach people how to use the futures market, and we were both licensed futures brokers during that time period.
We've had some crazy wild swings on orange juice futures this year. Tell us where the highs have been and where they've dropped to.
Well, it's important to understand before we get into that futures markets essentially play two roles. They shift risks from hedgers to speculators. Hedgers are trying to stabilize their cost of goods in various commodities. And they also function as price discovery mechanisms. A futures market consists of a large number of buyers and sellers, usually on a worldwide basis, and their collective knowledge has proven time and again that futures markets are a better indicator of what future supply and demand conditions are, and thus prices, than any individual or forecasting model. Now, that being said, futures prices may discount what a cash market is for various reasons, where the points of delivery are, the countries of origin where the product is produced, quality specifications, what so have you, but they are very good indicators, particularly on a long-term basis, of supply, demand, and price conditions for the commodity that the futures are all about.
So with that background, tell us about the crazy swings we've had this year in OGA futures.
Well, I guess you could say we started the year out when in late December, the Coca-Cola company reported that our carbendazim had been found in very low levels in some of their products and their competitors' products that were available for sale in packaged form in the marketplace and also stored in tank farms. And that led to testing by the FDA to determine the amount of carbendazim. The limit was set at 10, which is very low for imports coming in, and 80 parts per billion. These are parts per billion. For stuff in tank farms, the product in tank farms stored in the United States was less than the 80, but the imports coming in would not meet the 10. They were greater than that. So as a result, as of February of this year, Brazilian imports stopped coming in from Brazil to the U.S., and Brazil is the largest producer of orange juice in the world. They produce about half the world's orange juice. They are also our largest source of orange juice imports, and those imports stopped. We still continue to get some imports coming in that came through Canada or other countries that had Brazilian product in those. A number of those were rejected. So we were without those imports from February through May of this year. The futures market reacted, thinking that without those imports, we wouldn't have enough supply. Prices began to rise. By the end of January, they hit $2.27 a pound solid. They had been trading in the mid-160s in December prior to this. At that point in time, the market began to recognize that at these higher prices, something was going to happen to the retail markets. Our retail market has been declining. Our retail orange juice market has been declining on average 3.7% a year for the last 10 years. Some years up, some down, but that's the average rate of decline. And as a result of the carbendazim scare, consumers were worried that carbendazim might be harmful. And a lot of consumers decided that they didn't want to consume orange juice until they learned more. In February, compared to the same period a year ago, consumption was down 15.5%, orange juice consumption. In the period January through May of this year, orange juice consumption has been down 11.8%. That compares to an average rate of decline of 3.7%. So we saw our market weaken and consumption move away more than it had been as a result of this. At the same time, the European market, which is now a larger market than the U.S. market, wasn't concerned about carbendazim. Their limit is 200 parts per billion, and Brazilian exports cleared that. Their market has recently been stronger than ours. It has seen some declines, but the market has been switching from juice blends and juice drinks, which they call nectars, to 100% products. And so it's been fairly steady, although recent economic turmoil is weakening that market over there as well. As a result of all this, you begin to see the prices start to come down. Pretty soon, by early March, late February, early March, prices were back to where they were in December. And then, all of a sudden, it became apparent that Brazil's crop this year would be record levels. They had estimated 355 million boxes just when they started harvest last year. By late March, early April of this year, it was evident that the crop was going to be over 400 million boxes, some estimates as high as 428 million boxes for the Sao Paulo, Minas Gerais area. The record, I believe, prior to that was in 97-98 at 420 million boxes, And the average annual level of the crop this for the last 10 years has been 325 million boxes. So record crop in Brazil, tank farms full, and the next crop in Brazil is estimated to be about 365 million boxes, well above that average of 325 million boxes. Tank farms full, huge supplies in Brazil, weak market in the U.S., weaker because of the carbendazim issue, apparently, and futures prices begin to dive. I described to one person they were like a roller coaster on the downside hill of the track out of control. Within a few weeks, they'd traded below a dollar, 97 cents, I believe, and sometime around mid-May. Then they began to strengthen because rumors were circling that Brazilian processors didn't have enough room to process this year's crop in their tank farms, and some processors were saying that they may not process all of the early part of the crop. Even rumors that a couple might be closing some plants down temporarily. And as a result, the market doesn't know how much of the Brazilian crop that they're headed into this year, projected at about 365 million boxes, how much of that's going to be processed. So the market is strengthened on up to around the $10, $12 level, and is sitting there, I think, with a gigantic question mark.
The next question then, what impact does orange juice futures pricing have on Florida citrus growers or any other aspect of the Florida citrus industry? Let's start with growers.
Well, to start with, the futures market in this case is a price discovery mechanism. It is a reflection of what traders think supply and demand means prices should be, not necessarily orange prices, but futures prices, which can discount bulk concentrate prices by 10 to 25 cents a pound solid, again, depending on the point where they're delivered, the country of origin issues, product specifications. Because of the demand for fruit, Florida fruit, particularly Valencias, and not from concentrate, Valencia prices can go a lot higher than futures. Back when futures peaked at 227, Valencia prices apparently offers peaked around 260, so there's a good example of how they can be different. But if the futures market is high, that usually means things are scarce and fruit prices will be high. If the futures market is very low, that means that there things are plentiful relative to demand and inventories are relatively full and fruit prices could be low. If the futures market stays in the around the levels that it is now, fruit prices most likely will be lower than they were last year. We don't know how much lower, but they will probably be lower. Growers usually don't hedge with futures because oranges aren't deliverable to a futures contract, and sometimes to make a hedge work, you must deliver against the hedge, although not most of the time. That's cross-hedging. Fruit dealers do hedge with the futures market, particularly when a plant gives them a pricing mechanism they can hedge, or sometimes to improve a sale price without taking any risk by using an option. But most of the users of the futures market are processors, and some of the processors use it very heavily. Some, every drop of juice they sell is hedged. Others use it less frequently, and some don't use it at all, so it varies. But it is used as an effective hedging tool in the Florida citrus industry.
On OJ futures as a whole, who probably trades more of them, people within the Florida citrus industry like processors or New York City futures traders?
Well, you know, speculators trade the market because they take the risks that hedgers seek to avoid. And so usually there's a fairly good balance between speculators and hedgers. Sometimes it may get overly spec-driven, but usually those speculators are knowledgeable traders, and they can take a market in the short term lower than it should be, and it'll correct and come back up. Or in an up market, it could overcorrect and be higher than it should be, will come back down. But over long periods of time, the market's fairly rational, and the speculators enable the hedgers to manage their risk. That's how an effectively functioning market should function.
But in a crazy place where we had the huge swings this year in a few months, you kind of discount those crazy swings and look more at the long-term trend?
I tend to look at the long-term trend, that's correct. But you must realize when people didn't know what lack of imports were going to do, that panic led the market up because people were worried, where are we going to get product for our market? When it was evident the market was weakening much faster than it had been, probably due to this carbendazim issue, they began to worry where we're going to put the product we've got, and it began to go down. And then when it looked like we had huge crops in Brazil, it went down further. To me, that's rational market behavior.
I'm Ernie Neff. You're listening to Southeast AgNet.